as I've been reading through the letters of Byrne Cullen Elliott, having to do with their 62 years of ministry in Peru, missionary service there, one of the recurring themes that's mentioned, not all the time, but from time to time, is their philosophy towards and use of money. They were very aware of the fact that the money that was given to them support was given by people at great sacrifice. Oftentimes they gave up something of them for themselves in order to support Burton Culling down in Peru. They often expressed thanksgiving for that. Many of their letters, they did form letters, and so the thanksgiving would come at the end. They would give a personal thank you for giving such and such. The sense of stewardship impacted their buying decisions. One time they had nursed along a wringer washing machine that was given to them used, and they nursed it along for 20 years. And they had an opportunity to go down to Iquitos and buy a brand new one that was imported from the States. And they thought, what will our supporters think if we buy this new machine? They were very generous with their finances, at times to a fault. When finances were tight, they told the Lord and nobody else. And so they were very careful about that. There are times when their truck needed new tires or battery and they didn't have the money to buy it, and they'd go down to the post office box and pick it up, and there'd be a check for just about the amount that they needed. I know that because they would never share that with everybody, the tightness of it, but they would write, Aunt Colleen would write to her sister Joan, and at times would say, no, don't tell anybody else, but this is what happened. And they would always rejoice. They knew how to get along with humble means. They were always uncomfortable in knowing how to live in prosperity. In their later years, they were able to buy a house in Trujillo that was a very nice house. Relatively speaking, it was nothing elaborate, but it was very, very comfortable. When you'd visit, they would kiddingly say, don't tell people at home how nice of a house we have, because they would think, what would these supporters think who had given? One time, Uncle Bert was asked to speak in a conference, a Bible conference in Yermaguas. And when they were done with the conference, there's a number of speakers there, and when they were done with the conference, all of the speakers were given an honorarium. They're all national speakers except for Uncle Bert. It was the first time they had really been given an honorarium by the people down there. And they had to stop and think about it. It caused them to be very uncomfortable. You know, we're here to minister to them and not for them to give us money. But then they realized there was a step of maturity on the part of the church down there and on part of their national leaders to recognize we have a responsibility to help out those who are preaching the word to us. There's an awkwardness, but they took it graciously and realized that that's what they needed to do, because it was actually a very positive step in maturing of that church. Today we're going to be talking about Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. And you sense in this passage the same type of awkwardness on the part of Paul that Burton Colleen felt. They say this is a thank you letter from Paul, but he never thanks them for the gift. The word thank you is not there. We would call it an acknowledgement of the gift. Usually, when you write a thank you note, you put the thank you note at the first. Now, Bert and Colleen didn't because they had a form letter, but if they're writing just a letter for a thank you note, you'd start out with the thank you note, the thank you part of it, and then you go on to other things. So people have asked, why did Paul leave it to the last part of it? Some have said, and there are kind of three different versions or thoughts of why it was waited to the end. First is some thought that there are several letters written to Philippians, and somebody came and kind of brought two or three of them together, and so they tacked a thank you note that was written at a different time and put it onto this letter. There's really no evidence of that, and the letter seems to flow well, so I don't think that's a possibility. The second is that maybe Paul dictated the rest of the letter and somebody else wrote it. And so then when he comes to this point, he's writing this in his own hands. And so the word in verse 10 that starts out with the word but, that maybe that's what he's doing there. He says, but then he goes on and says, this is the part that I have. But it could be that the subject of finances was very touchy for Paul. And this is what I think. Several weeks ago when we were studying inductive Bible study, we learned the phrase hapax legomena, which means that this word is only used once in all of the New Testament. There are five of those words in these four verses. So it's almost like he's searching for words because he's not quite sure how to express these thoughts. He's alluded to the gift in chapter 1, where he talks about in verse 5, verse 4 says, I thank God from all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy, my every prayer for you all, in view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. And something that participation, you know, they preached the gospel and shared it and all that, but part of that may have been a financial part that they had with him. Then down to verse 7, for it is only right for me to feel this way about you all, because I have you in my heart, since both in my imprisonment and defense of the gospel and condemnation of the gospel, you all are partakers of grace with me. A sense that he's acknowledging to them their participation and their financial gift. Paul was very strong in the fact that those who share the gospel have a right to or the opportunity to be supported by those, by the churches that they support and those to whom they preach the gospel. And he says that's a part of the responsibility we have, is to support those who do that. And Sue and I, for 35 years, have appreciated your support and our ministry and what we've done here, and it's been a blessing to us, and I trust it has been to you as well. So Paul says that's something that should be a part of the preaching of the gospel and from those who benefit from it. But for himself, he insisted on having a tent-making ministry, literally, because that's where that term tent-making comes from. For those of you who don't know the term, a tent-making ministry is those who go out and support themselves financially in some other way and then do ministry as a result of that. And there are many places in the world where that's the only opportunity you have. There are some countries that when you go in there, you can't go in as a missionary. You have to go in as a tent maker, where you raise your own funds and support yourselves. And that's the only way you can be in there. But for himself, he didn't feel right going to starting these churches and expecting them to support him, so he insisted on a tent-making ministry. He didn't want people to think that his motive for ministry was greed, so he's very careful in what he did and how he handled finances, and felt awkward receiving finances from the church in Philippi. They gave at least two different gifts to him. We don't know of any other churches that supported him in this way, but they did in this case. Hawthorne writes this. He said, this caused him to write a careful reply that combined cautious gratitude with a gentle but firm demand that they not henceforth infringe on his own self-reliance. So he insisted on supporting himself as he went along, And but he graciously accepts her gift, as did Uncle Bert and Colleen in that one instance. So follow with me as I read the passage, Philippians chapter 4, beginning with verse 10. But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned for me before, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Nevertheless, you have done well to share with me in my affliction. The three words that I want to highlight here, one is the word concern, and then the word contentment, and then the word confidence. Concern, contentment, and confidence. The word but there I've referred to earlier, and it kind of has a sense of, I have to be careful not to forget to write this acknowledgement of the gift that you've sent me. And it's interesting in the terminology he uses here. He doesn't rejoice in the gift. He doesn't rejoice in the people who gave the gift. He rejoices in the Lord who motivated the people to give the gift. Do you see that? He says, I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. That word revive really is the word, the idea of a blossoming. It's kind of like that concern that you have blossomed, and then you expressed it out of that. So he's thrilled that concern that's there is beginning to take root and beginning to come out because they have such a heart for him. And they love him so dearly. And they're convinced of his ministry and that God is using him. He was on their heart. And that meant a great deal to them. That's part of what he says in chapter 1. He says, you have this concern, this participation. And he says, the gift is, you know, it helps financially to make ends meet. But he says, I recognize that this gift is an expression that comes from the heart. So it means you haven't forgotten about me and that you are behind me in terms of your support and your caring and your love for me. And your desire for participation in my ministry is the phrase that Paul uses. He says here, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. We have no clue what that lacked opportunity means. We don't know whether there's nobody to take the gift until Epaphroditus was willing to take it to Paul. We don't know whether they're tight on finances. Another place we know that the churches in Philippi were tight on finances, but they gave out of their poverty to support the churches in Jerusalem. So we don't know what the lack there, whether there's lack of finances, whether there's bad weather so they couldn't get the money to him. I don't know what it is, but he says you didn't have the opportunity to do it, but it's come back and you're able to give financially. And he said, that means a lot to me. And it's an evidence of the work of God in their lives. So just like Bert and Colleen were able to look at that honorarium that he received and say, that's an evidence that these people who they pour their lives into in Yermagas for 37 years plus, that they pour their lives into, there's acknowledgement that they are growing and that they are taking responsibility. It's the growth of a church. And so he rejoices in that. So there's a concern. It comes out of a heart of a concern. And Paul recognizes that even though it's a little bit difficult for him to take it and to accept it, he realizes it comes out of a heart concern. And he thrills in that and he rejoices in that. The second is the word contentment. Not that I speak from want, for I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. If you mark your Bible, circle the word learned.